him with a couple of sentences. In spite of the impressive gains made in science and technology, it's a pity that cancer, which is not detected, religious fundamentalism is also spreading fast and dangerously. This is a different kind of religious fundamentalism which frowns on any kind of independent thinking and is ready to physically assault people who don't agree with them on their own version of what is history, what is religion, and things like that. There are four distinguished speakers in this panel. I shall make a very brief introduction of them. They shall talk on the subject for 15 minutes. After 12 minutes, I shall sound a warning which shall allow them time to sum up. And then, after the four speakers have finished, there will be a question and answer session. Now, the speakers are as follows. Father Myron Pereira, who is to my left, is a Christian priest belonging to the Jesuit religious order. For several years, he worked at the Xavier Institute of Communications, Bombay, as a communications teacher, writer, and producer of audio-visual material. We also have Dr. Vasudev Vyas, visiting professor of Hindi and Ayurveda for over 40 years at the Poddar College, Bombay. Dr. Vyas is a wife by profession, and he has made a deep study of the subject under discussion. Next to him is Dr. Zakir Naik, again an MBBS man from Grant Medical College. He is the Secretary General of an institution called Islamic Research Foundation. He is a student of comparative religion, and I am told he can quote verbatim copious passages from all the religious books, including Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. The final speaker is Mr. Ashok Sahani, who has the distinction of translating the controversial book Lajja into Marathi. So we have four speakers of different caliber, different categories. It's going to be a very interesting discussion. I now request Father Pereira to start off, or in the football parlance, to kick off.
Thank you, Mr. Gangadhar. Dear friends, the proposition before us has been stated: religious fundamentalism is an obstacle to freedom of speech. Put in these terms, one can answer quite simply and quite quickly, yes. And after that, there is no more discussion. But if one were to do this, of course, it's very misleading. Because I think what's important to understand, and I think a group like this is very well equipped to understand, is why is it that at the close of the 20th century, we have a resurgence of religious fundamentalism? Just when we thought that it should be an age of science and technological progress and, well, in every sense of the word, how is it that religion has come back again to the fore, to the headlines of today's papers, and even more, an aspect of religion which we thought had already died decades ago, religious fundamentalism? Not only that, every major religion has its fundamentalist. The context of today's meeting is the Muslim fundamentalism and the wave of attacks against Tasleema Nasreen in Bangladesh, and the instances of that in Pakistan and all over the Muslim world. Yes, there is also Hindu fundamentalism, there is also Christian fundamentalism, there is also Zionist Jewish fundamentalism. I think perhaps we haven't come across Buddhist fundamentalism yet, but Sikh fundamentalism also. So this is not only a religious phenomenon, but a political phenomenon. And that is, I think, an important thing that we'd like to get behind today in today's discussion. So what I want to do now is to, not to talk about Christian fundamentalism, that, as I said to some of the organizers a little while ago, is not a relevant political problem in this country. If you were in America, you would talk about that. Here it is not important. However, what is important, I think, is to understand the mindset of the fundamentalist. And I'm going to put before you a few points to help you elucidate this. I hope you will come back a little later with questions on what I'm going to say. Fundamentalism is the strict adherence to orthodox religious beliefs and traditions. So it's a strict clinging to, adherence to orthodox religious beliefs and traditions. It's a definition from the Oxford Dictionary. Such as, whatever, the inerrancy of scripture is one, or a literal interpretation of the scripture is another, and so on. Now, the religious attitude per se is not necessarily fundamentalist. I think this is an important point that has got to be stressed. The fact that you are the religious person need not be, and generally speaking has not been, that you are a fundamentalist. Because otherwise, usually the arguments of most secularists are, if you're a religious person, therefore by the very fact you're a fundamentalist. And this is false. I'm a religious person, but I'm not a fundamentalist in any sense of the word. And there are countless others like me, whether Hindus, Muslims, etc. So there are liberal traditions in every religion, and there are oppressive traditions in every religion. So what I'm saying now, the first point is that every religion has the capacity to liberate individuals and communities, and has the capacity to oppress individuals and communities. This then is a fact. And if you study the history of every religion, you'll find groups that have been oppressed by them. Just as there have been groups that have changed their religion in order to experience freedom and liberation. So the liberal tradition within any religion would be open to interpretations of scripture, would be open to a dialogue with other opinions, would be open to particularly an acceptance of pluralism. Now there are many other things, but these three things I think are important in our own context. Firstly, an interpretation of the scriptures. Secondly, a dialogue with other opinions, even if you don't agree with those other opinions, whether they come from within the religion or from outside the religion. So for example, Christian fundamentalists, as Mr. Bangal just mentioned, you have a group called the Moral Majority in the United States. Many of the television preachers are of the fundamentalist persuasion. And sometimes you hear them on Radio Sri Lanka, and sometimes on American TV too. Now, one of the things is that they bomb abortion clinics because they believe very fiercely that to abort a child is tantamount to murder. So therefore they say we'll kill the murderers. Okay, according to their logic, so they bomb abortion clinics. So we are not prepared therefore for any kind of dialogue in this matter at all. Absolutely. So the first thing would be, therefore, a dialogue with other opinions, an interpretation of the scriptures, and an acceptance of pluralism. Nevertheless, the fundamentalist point of view springs from a theocratic view of society. Now, this is the word, just give me a little time at least to elucidate it. Theocracy is a belief that God alone is the ruler, and all of us are under God's law. And if this is so, therefore, what human beings can do is not to make laws of their own by a kind of human consent or majority consent, but just obey God's laws. And God's laws are revealed to you in the scripture. So any theocratic government has this as a basis and is not open to dialogue at all. So if you don't accept this, you are in error. I am not in error. I am righteous in this matter. So, this was a state of government in most countries of the world, including Christian Europe, right until roughly the 17th century. A lot of Christians or Christian governments regularly burnt heretics at the stake, regularly hounded out those who did not believe in certain tenets of the scriptures. You are familiar, for example, with what is called witch hunting. Today we use it for what is done. We are finding out someone who is of another opinion, and we call a witch hunt. But the actual historical witch hunts which took place in Germany in the 16th century were horrendous, where thousands of women, on mere suspicion of being a witch, were firstly flogged and then burnt at stake. They call witch hunting. Today we use it for what is done. We are finding out someone who is of another opinion, and we call a witch hunt. But the actual historical witch hunts which took place in Germany in the 16th century were horrendous, where thousands of women, on mere suspicion of being a witch, were firstly flogged and then burnt at stake, because they were supposed to be the spouses of the devil. You're familiar with the Galileo case, where the church proscribed the teachings of Galileo and asked him to recant and put him in prison. Alright, so this is the background, the history of theocracy. Now today, most countries in the world are not theocratic, at least not obviously so. But there is a kind of going back to theocracy in certain parts of the world, and we'll come to this in a moment. So I said, one of the things is, law is based on revelation. It's not based, as you would say in a secular country, on reason. It's not based on anything which can be scientifically validated. That's not important. What is important, you believe. Faith is important. You don't have faith, you get faith, or shut up. The second thing is that those who uphold this law are there by a hierarchical system, not by a democratic one. In a secular government, in a secular country, you choose your representatives, and though sometimes the choice can be faulted and it is sometimes defective, whatever, you have the right to choose them at different times. So a democratic elective process comes into play. In a theocratic government, that is not possible. It is hierarchical, which means to say a certain elite, and usually a religious elite, decides. In Christian Europe, it was the priests and who goes in their influence. In a lot of Islamic countries, it is the ulema. As we saw recently, one or two years ago, at the height of the Ayodhya questions, it was the sons and the mahants who came to the fore, and therefore who were strongly then contesting for leadership even within the VHP. So you see, at some time or other, when you get into fundamentalism, you cannot avoid the fact that religious leaders come to the fore and take hold of the whole movement. Now, these are therefore one or two points which I make about the nature of theocracy and how fundamentalism is related to theocracy. Fundamentalism, therefore, the strict adherence of what is revealed and as interpreted by a priestly caste for the rest. Finally, and last point, and I was done. Why is it that fundamentalism has seen such an upsurge today? Just as I said, when we are at the end of a kind of scientific age. I put it to you, this is an indication of the failure of science and the failure of secularism. The fact that in so many third world democratic countries, these governments are slothful and corrupt. In other words, they have not succeeded in bringing about a just and an equitable society. In other words, secularists have entirely discounted religion and have also thrown it out of the window. And in parts of the secular world, like in the Marxist countries, the communist countries, the Eastern Bloc, it was even forbidden to be a religious practitioner. You could be put to death, and you certainly were a discriminated group in society. So this has been one reason why what you throw out and you try to proscribe comes back again through the back door. Also, we must remember that for thousands, especially in the Islamic world, the experience of the West is in one of oppression. I was remarking some years ago when the Rushdie crisis had just erupted, telling every farmer to be talking about it, said he had absolutely no idea how much this kind of Western liberalized liberalism as symbolized by Salman Rushdie, how much that is hated by the average Muslim. This is something which
Salman Rushdie, in his own pride and arrogance, utterly discounted. Now I think this is something to be taken into account, that the experience of millions of people in the third world, whether they are Islamic countries, or whether they are Buddhist countries, whether they are Hindu countries, when they look at the West, which they call the Christian West, which is not the Christian West, but is the post-Christian West, because it is already secular and atheistic. They've got nothing but hatred for that. But this also is a reason why thousands of religious leaders say there's nothing that you can hope for from that kind of civilization. Their children are on drugs. They've got no future at all. Rather, come back to your own roots, come back to Islam, come back to Hinduism, come back to Christianity, come back to the Bible. This is one of the... So, this is one reason why fundamentalism is growing in popularity, for example, all over West Asia. Today, young Egyptians are not of the peasant class, not of the laboring class who become fundamentalists, they are those who return from the West, students, who form a good bit of the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo and in other parts of West Asia. Fundamentalism basically offers a simple solution, to go back to a simpler kind of society. I personally don't believe it is possible. It offers a solution which would be valid two or three centuries ago. It's no longer valid today. Today, in fact, we live in a pluralist society. We live within a scientific age. Fundamentalism would like to close us in and to keep us over there and say, all right, now all of us can believe the same things. We can't believe the same things anymore. Therefore, the challenge is to make a democratic, secular society work. If it works, there's no threat at all from fundamentalism. And all those countries, I was just reading the papers recently, Morocco is a good, Tunisia is a good example of that, where alone of almost of the whole of the Arab world, it has managed to hold the fundamentalists at bay. Because Bourguiba, when he came into power, spent 25% of the budget on education. And that is one reason why, although the fundamentalist parties are there always agitating for power, the Democratic Party still holds. All right, I'll end up right now. There are many more things can be said, but as you realize, I'll try to give you an idea of how fundamentalism starts and why it has a certain hold today and what we can do, in other words, to keep it at bay. Thank you.